everybody, and welcome to the afternoon session of the Portland City Council for July 29th. Would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz? Fish? Hales?
Here. Commissioner Fritz should be joining us momentarily, and Commissioner Fish is out of town. So welcome, everyone. This is the continuation of the hearing on the Southeast Quadrant Plan, part of an effort that a lot of you in this room have been involved in for some time. And in fact, part of the larger effort to update our comprehensive plan that will be completed over the next year. As I said last time we gathered on this, this is really a big deal. It's an exciting time for the Central East Side and for the Central City as well as the rest of our community just because of the growth and change and dynamism that we have underway in our city. So the whole purpose of this kind of a planning effort is to try to manage change to get the change that we want and keep the things that we want to keep. And those are, frankly, a struggle in our city. And it's certainly a difficult set of problems in the Central East Side. But we think that the Southeast Quadrant Plan team have done a good job and that the blueprint for change that we have in front of us is a good one. There's still more work to do and there are more people to hear from today. So we heard from a diverse group of people at the July 8th hearing. You know, I think one of the things that was impressive to me about this process is the high level of agreement we've reached even on issues like transportation in the Central East Side, where we've had pretty sharp divisions of opinion in the past. So again, we don't think that everything has reached 100% unanimity here, but there's an awful lot of agreement, and I want to thank everybody involved in the planning process and commend again our team from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for creating that kind of environment where people have been able to come together and work out a lot of issues. We have some responses to some of the things that we heard in the previous hearing in the form of amendments today, so we'll be taking those up in a few minutes. Again, we're going to give people a chance to speak who were signed up last time and did not get a chance to do so, as well as others who may be here today. So with that, I think I'll call on Sally Edmonds and the team from the Bureau to start us off, and I know Patrick Quinton and folks from PDC are here queued up as well. So, Sally, thank you.
Excuse me, Mayor, I haven't read the title yet.
You sure haven't. Go ahead, please.
Sure. Item 814, adopt the Southeast Quadrant Plan as direction for updating the Central City Plan.
Thank you. Now, Sally.
Yes,
we're legally able to ask you to speak.
Okay. Good afternoon, Council members. I'm Sally Edmonds, and I manage the Central City River and Environmental Teams at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Before we get started, I just wanted to point out that the Southeast Quadrant Plan is part of a larger effort to update the Central City 2035 Plan. And once this is complete, our next step is to dig into the details and put together the policies and the code and everything to go along with it. There will be a number of other opportunities for the public to be involved as we do that. We plan to have some open houses in November and December with a first draft of that package. So today we'd like to begin by presenting some additional information regarding the basis for expanding the employment opportunity sub-area in the Central East Side. Analysis conducted by BPS and PDC support this expansion as the best way to address workspace demands for all sectors within the Central East Side and as a means to create space for the employment increases that are projected in this district. So I'd like to turn it over to PDC Director Patrick Quinton. Thanks.
Thank you, Sally. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Happy to be here to provide a little context kind of from the PDC perspective on what we're seeing in the local economy and how that relates to the proposal before you. Before I do that, though, I want to take the opportunity with the mic to really express my gratitude for the great work of the BPS staff on all the Southeast Quad work, all the comprehensive plan work. They've been working on this for many, many years. What we're talking about today is an incredibly thoughtful proposal that I think, and I'll share that in a second, believe effectively balances the interests of a variety of stakeholders. And they got to this point through very extensive review and analysis of data on the local economy, on what's going on in the district, as well as broad outreach to many stakeholders over many years we at PDC have been partnering with BPS on this work as kind of one set of eyes and ears on what's going on in the economy, and we do think this is responsive to what we're seeing across a variety of business sectors. So I think we all know why there's so much interest in this topic, and it's because despite many constraints, essentially SIDE is an incredible success. It is home to roughly 17,000 jobs. It's either the densest job district or one of the densest job districts in the state, and this density. This job density has evolved over the years or grown over the years because it's home to so many sectors. If we were just a kind of single sector district, you wouldn't see this kind of concentration of jobs. You wouldn't see this kind of firm growth. It truly hasn't been one sector dominating this district. It's been kind of the interplay of the sectors that's made its work, that's made the district work. But we're at a point now, and this is one of the things that PDC sees in our work, is that unless we figure out a way to provide incentives for new commercial industrial space to be developed, I think job growth is going to plateau, and pretty much across all sectors. And the reason that is that we're really at the limit of what private investors are going to invest in terms of projects. They really do need to see a return if they're going to take on whole building renovation, if they're going to take on new construction. And we do have underdeveloped parcels, not just buildings in the Central East Side, as we get closer to the light rail alignment, that really do offer the opportunity to create a lot of new industrial space for the district. But there needs to be an incentive for investment to occur. And you know, the current overlay doesn't serve that purpose. And you know, we don't need to get into economics 101 too deeply, but I think we all know with a fixed supply or a pretty constrained supply, it's highly unlikely that rents are going to go down, and it's quite likely, given what we see in terms of demand, that rents will continue to go up under the current framework. So really, I do think we're in a position in which some kind of change is needed in order to meet the demand. And once again, that's demand across all sectors. I'm not just talking about demand for office space, whatever. But what's nice about this is that we truly do, if you put me once again, ask the planning staff, how many places around the city can you make changes to the zoning and have a pretty clear path to development of new space across, once again, a range of sectors and job creation like we have here in the Central East Side. I mean, Tyler is going to walk through the projections in a second. And obviously, none of this is guaranteed, but there's reasonable assumptions that these changes can add over the next 20 years to about 12 million square feet of space, including about 25% of that is a new industrial space, and about 9,000 jobs. That's over a 50% increase in the job base of this district. I think we would all choose to have that outcome if we could magically wave our wand and say yes. How that job growth occurs, the kind of job growth obviously is part of what we're talking about today. But I think we can all agree that this is an opportunity we should be taking advantage of. And it's not really about choosing one industry over another. And all industries suffer if we don't figure out a way to attract new development into the district. I do think we benefit a range of industries if we can make these kind of changes, because they do incent both new industrial development as well as other types of development. I want to end on just two things. First one, I don't want to give the impression that we just say let the market work and it'll take care of itself. So we shared with you in advance of your last hearing a table of all the assistance that we provided to businesses on the Central East Side. There's about 25 businesses over, I believe, the last 8 or 9 years. That includes direct financial assistance as well as access to programs like the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which provides lean technical assistance to manufacturing firms. We provide the Enterprise Zone is available to companies in this district. And when you look at the companies that we've worked with, it's once again, it's across this range of sectors that, you know, that classify as, you know, traditional industrial, craft manufacturing, non-manufacturing. I mean, there's a range of companies that we work with, and we are committed to continuing to do that as long as we have the money and the tools available to do that. And I know that there are two amendments that have been proposed that we're supportive of to take a look at what else can be done to support the small manufacturing, craft manufacturing in the district as well as citywide, and we do think that's that should be a priority to make sure that we continue to think about how we make Portland a home for manufacturing and particularly small manufacturing, which leads me to my last point, which is we need to be having this conversation about the entire city. The Essential East Side is a success, and I think there's a lot more job growth that we can get out of it, but we're not going to be able to meet the demand for job for space for jobs to be created on the Central East Side, and it's all sectors. So this can't be the end of the conversation. This is the closest industrial neighborhood to downtown. It's obviously in high demand, and we should do our best to maximize job density across all sectors, but we really do need to be thinking about how we get that growth to occur in East Portland and in North Portland and other places. And I'm not just talking about small manufacturing firms, I'm talking about design firms, creative firms. We need to be expanding the conversation about what the city is doing to help the firms that we're talking about here on the Central East Side, because eventually, no matter what we do, we aren't going to have enough space, and we need to make sure that we're thinking about how the next place where companies go is ready, like Lentz or Cully or elsewhere. So we're hopeful that this is going to move through, because we do think it's going to mean a lot to the broader business community. But we also want to continue the conversation about how we make all of Portland a home for small companies, small manufacturers. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, before you transition on to Tyler, let me bear down on that issue a little bit and get you to, as you make your presentation, Tyler, reflect on this, and maybe Patrick talk about it some more when he concludes. And that is, we've heard a strong interest not only in growth in the Central East Side, but also in retention.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Clock is here. He gave the council a letter, which we all have. A lot of the existing manufacturers in the district remain concerned about the continuing viability of manufacturing in the district. We heard that from Kelly Roy and the Portland Made group as well. So I guess I want you, as you give us this economic analysis, to look at both scenarios of with and without the overlay. What are our prospects for both growth and retention in each scenario? Because I think everyone involved wants both, right? Debbie Kitchen's here. I think the Central East Side Industrial Council wants to both retain the employers and particularly the makers and manufacturers that are there now. That's a struggle because costs are rising. So what are these strategy choices in front of us portend in our ability to do that? We're trying to see around that corner together here about which of these approaches will best both facilitate the growth that you talked about and that rightly is a concern of the comp plan and therefore this piece of the comp plan, but also we care about retention. So what are our prospects and what are the trade-offs, if any, if we do adopt the recommendation that's in front of us of expanding the EOS overlay to basically the entire industrial part of the district?
Do you want me to tackle that one now or later?
Start now.
It's when we say job growth, you don't, it's easier to retain a job than it is to grow a job. So when we say growth, it's assuming that we maintain our base. That's not a pure, it's not like we maintain every job because there's always different things that impact company success. So absolutely the goal is to maintain companies there. I think this is a common sense approach because we will provide more opportunities for companies to expand in the district and provide more opportunities for companies that want to locate in districts to locate so they're not all competing for the same limited supply of space. So I think there's a retention aspect to this as well. But the other piece is, I think everyone jumps to the cost as being the primary reason why companies locate elsewhere. But I also think what's driving companies that expand into other industrial areas in the city is that they can't find the space they need. So companies that are successful and need to go from 5 to 10,000 square feet or 10 to 20,000 square feet, it's not an easy task to just go find 20,000 square feet of space, industrial space, and essentially side. And that's not because somehow it's all been gobbled up by other companies. It's because there's no incentive right now for anybody to develop that space. It really is a constrained market. So companies are able to find bigger spaces in places like the Northwest Industrial Area and other places. If you go there, it's a somewhat different pattern. It's got bigger lots. It has bigger buildings. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing companies finding bigger spaces elsewhere in the city. And, you know, from where I sit, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That was my last point is, if they go from the Central East Side and they expand and they end up in the Northwest Industrial Area, I think we should be somewhat indifferent to that, as long as they're still prospering, they can still attract the employees they need. But if what they really want to do is expand in place or expand in the same neighborhood, then I think we do need to figure out how to grow the supply of space. All the while being attentive to what is happening with lease rates in the district. And so I share everybody's concern in that we should not just step away and watch the market take over. We should be, if we do see that space is becoming increasingly unaffordable, even as supply increases, then I think we need to step in and either take action from either land use perspective or incentives, you know, programs designed to make it more affordable. I mean, that's what I would say now. But we're operating in somewhat of an artificial environment right now, so the conversation is conceptual because it's just this. You know, it's this bubble. Central East Side is this kind of zoning bubble where we don't really know how much supply can be created if we allowed for more development of kind of mixed use industrial space. So I think partially we want to see if what we can do to attract that new supply. And so I think we're going to learn some stuff along the way as well.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Tyler, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm going to answer some questions that came up in the previous hearing and then address some of these retention growth issues going throughout these slides as well, because I do think throughout the Southeast Quadrant Plan we have heard a lot of issues related to small business retention and industrial business and manufacturer retention in the district, and we do have some proposals that have addressed those issues, so I'll go through those as we go through the presentation. Just as a big framework here, the Central East Side, when we think about employment districts in the context of the comprehensive plan update right now, and specifically the employment opportunity or the economic opportunities analysis, is the Central East Side falls into the central city aggregate geography. So it's a industrial district, a central city industrial district that functions more of as an incubator district and a mixed employment district. And as Patrick mentioned earlier, some of the larger industrial users that are in Columbia East or some of our airport and harbor districts or even the Portland Harbor waterfront have different building needs, have different business needs that are more reflective of those specific geographies. So in the central city geography, this red line on the left side here is really the job growth that the 9,000 jobs that we're anticipating in the Central East Side. So that's a small share, about 20% of the overall job growth in the central city, but a very, very important part of that job growth because it is a mixed employment district for the central city. The Central East Side has really, as Patrick mentioned, performed extremely well throughout the previous business cycle from 2000 to 2008, as well as growing jobs during the recession. This was one of the only employment districts in the city that grew jobs during the recession. And it continues to have significant job growth in a post-recession recovery. From 2000 to 2008, the average annual growth rate for employment was 3.7% compared to 1.1% citywide. So significantly more job growth has occurred in the Central East Side. That's across all industries. So a lot of growth has occurred in the sort of industrial office tenant type market. The industrial market, transportation distribution, what we kind of consider the traditional industrial users, has remained relatively flat. There's been a little bit of job growth, more firm creation, a lot of people doing businesses doing more with less space, creating more products with less employees. So there's been more firm creation. But compared to other industrial districts, it's performing really well, where we've seen decreases in manufacturing employment over the last 10 years or so. I want to go into the existing supply and the 2035 demand relative to what the proposed zone changes and the EOS overlay would accomplish in the Southeast Quadrant Plan. This is the demand, existing supply and demand by building type. So the 2035 demand is this sort of grayish bar there, and the existing supply is the blue. And the orange line is the capacity increases that we would see as the result of the Southeast Quadrant Plan. That's a total theoretical. That's looking at all of our vacant lots. That's looking at sites that are likely to redevelop. The majority, and I should note, the majority of this big orange bar that you see here of capacity increases for office is really along some of the more the larger parcel parts of the Central East Side. So like OMSI has a lot of vacant surface parking lots. There's a lot of vacant lots that are around some of the new station areas, and also in the Southern Triangle that has a lot of capacity and opportunity for economic development, employment development over the next 20 years. But what we see here specifically for industrial is that given the existing zoning pattern and what we see as demand for industrial uses, we won't be able to satisfy that demand if we leave the zoning as it is today. The proposal in the Southeast Quadrant Plan does a few things specific to address the industrial issues. One, it's reducing the retail allowances that are allowed by right in the current IG1 zone, which frees up some theoretical capacity, Mayor, as you mentioned, for industrial uses in that sort of theoretical building envelope. We're reducing the traditional office allowances as well. New development on vacant lots will have some industrial component to them. I think Patrick mentioned earlier we are likely to see some sort of industrial office mixed-use development type that's going to come into the Central East Side. We see some of that occurring right now. Some of the projects that Beam has, there's the Pittman Building at 3rd and Clay that's got a lot of food manufacturers on the ground floor with offices above it. In the Northwest District, we've got the New York, which is a multi-story industrial building. And so I think as we transition and further intensify the uses of our land around the central city, we'll start to see more of that sort of multi-story industrial office mixed employment development. And on the retention side, throughout the Southeast Quadrant proposal, we heard a few things. One was that specifically from small manufacturers and some of the larger folks is that industrial businesses are sometimes dirty and smelly and noisy. And so one of the things that we've done with the Southeast Quadrant plan is to put in a industrial disclosure statement for the office employees in the district. So if an office moves in upstairs from an industrial user, there is an expectation there that that industrial activity is going to continue to occur. A lot of what we heard from small manufacturers that had moved from the Northwest District over to the Central East Side over the last 15 years is that there were some conflicting use issues around noise and smell with some of the residential populations that moved into Northwest. So we were trying to get ahead of that for the industrial users and retain those businesses and the ability for them to function in the district through that. One of the other things is really the focus on the freight strategy and the sort of separation of uses between the freight and active transportation in the district and the alignment in the transportation approach in the Southeast Quadrant Plan to be able to continue to move trucks through the district, continue to have deliveries, and to mitigate the impact between those users and make it a safe district for everybody to utilize. So from a retention perspective, I think those are two big things in the Southeast Quadrant Plan that we've heard and that we're responding to. And
do the disclosure waivers also apply to residences that may be adjacent to the Central East Side?
If they're in the district, yes. So it would be not users outside the district. Actually, it's worth noting that I think most, if not all, of the industrial properties are already buffered by from the residential areas that are to the east. But if it's new residential development within a station area or along the main street corridors, they would also be subject to this disclosure statement.
Like the Killian Pacific, the Goat Blocks, that's going to have some residential, right?
Yes, that would be the type of project that would be subject to this, yes.
So I want to go into the rent levels. We've heard a lot about increasing lease rates and what's been happening functionally on the ground for a lot of these users in the district. These are a lot of crazy colored lines here, but the blue is the office, the sort of trends in office rates. The orange is industrial, the green is flex space, and the purplish color is retail. Pretty much all rates across building types have been steadily increasing over the last 10 years or so. Significant increases, price increases for the office market in the last 2 years. We see that across the board. That's putting more pressure on the supply of both industrial space and office space in the district. And in the industrial lease rates are up to about $10 a square foot, which is fairly close to where they were. They got up to about $8, $9 a square foot on average just prior to the recession. And so really what's happening is our economy continues to improve in the recovery, that these lease rates are starting to tick up past what they were in the previous boom cycle. And so this chart goes a little bit more into those lease rates relative to vacancy rates. The Central East Side industrial vacancy rate is 1.5%. That is an extremely low vacancy rate. And those increasing prices are responding to that vacancy rate. There's more people that want to be in the district. There's more industrial users that want to be there. There's more industrial office users that want to be there. And so the Southeast Quadrant proposal in allowing a flexibility of uses for industrial and office, we're hoping will have some impact to reduce the cost pressures on some of the users that are currently in the district and allow new users to come in as we anticipate this 9,000 new employees over the next 20 years. So with that, I think.
So let me just get you to pause there. I mean, I realize the Central East Side is there's not very many equivalents of it to it anywhere in the country, if any.
Right.
Other cities' experience with adding capacity in a market situation, something like this, any lessons to be learned from San Francisco or Brooklyn or you know, any of these other hot markets where a convergence of tech and traditional manufacturing are all in a relatively confined space?
Yeah, you know, there's some things been happening in different cities. I think we're being a little bit more conservative about what sort of uses we're really allowing in this district. A lot of those other cities have allowed residential uses by right in these industrial districts, which have dramatically transformed the landscape and the prices and the really the speculation around land purchases that drive rents up. I know, you know, in cities that are more similar in a real estate economic perspective, Denver has done some interesting things. They have tried to address some of these price issues with an industrial mixed-use zone that's in their form-based code. They've succeeded in some areas and not in others, but they are starting to see some of this EOS-type development that we're talking about, and some of it's in the traditional industrial districts, and some of it's more in the sort of mixed-use office cores that are adjacent to downtown. So they do have a zone that seems to be working well and delivering a product in the market specific to Denver that I think is something that we could be hopeful for here.
Okay, thank you. Questions, Troy? Go ahead, Troy.
Well, I was going to offer, we did make some changes to the amendment table from the last one and specifically to address these topics. So if you'd like, I could walk you through the changes to the amendments.
Yes, please walk us through the proposed amendments. I think we'll need a motion at that point after you're done with that to put so these additional amendments on into consideration.
You should have received a table, and it would have the date 7/27/2015 on the top on page 2. The first change to the amendments from the last hearing are we're pulling Amendment 2, which was dealing with maker economy. However, that one's being replaced by two additional amendments, which I'll cover in a second. The next change is on page 3. There was Amendment 4, which was dealing with removing a master plan requirement for the Clinton Station area. We're going to keep the action as is, so we're going to pull that amendment entirely. So the master plan process would still be in play there. And then on page 6, you'll find Amendment 10 and 11 are really replacing that Amendment 2. So the first one is looking at industrial space affordability. And the action calls for us to conduct a best practices study to understand how other cities are addressing the needs of manufacturers with a focus on but not limited to the ability to obtain affordable space, the economic growth of the sector and the local economy, and synergies with other industrial sectors and the role of government assistance. That would be, implementers would be Portland Development Commission and BPS. And that would be an ongoing study. We would start that sooner. It's actually, sorry, we amended this yesterday. We did change this. So the date would be to amend it with the plan 2016. Right. So we'd be moving that up. We'd be doing this immediately. And then the second amendment is looking at really best practices, strategies, research, and then developing that into new strategies. So we're taking what we learned from the first amendment, putting it into practice with the second amendment. That would be an ongoing process. So we would try to develop some strategies as soon as we've learned more in this next year or so. But I think we want to keep coming back to this over time and, you know, redeveloping our approach as new techniques come along. And then the last amendment, Amendment 12, is just a modification to an action that's already in the plan. It deals with publicly accessible open space. The language here was crafted with Commissioner Fish's office, and really what it's looking at is just kind of broadening what we mean by publicly accessible open space. It could be looking for opportunities to create open space on both public as well as privately owned land. It broadens the timeline for doing so and also includes a list of implementers that really are citywide in terms of city government. and then also the private sector. So those are the only changes we have.
Okay. Questions for Troy or others on the team about the proposed amendments, and then should we take a motion to put those on a under consideration for the council and take testimony on those as well? So is there a motion to accept these amendments for discussion?
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you. Okay. Thank you all. We'll take testimony and have you back. So again, let's go to the sign-up sheet from folks who signed up before first.
Okay, the first three I'll call are from the list previously, and if I don't call your name, please let me know. I have Doug Klotz, Tom Rocha, and Ryan Hashhagen, and then they'll be followed by Dana Krachuk, Haytham Toulon, Riddard Schouten, and then Dave Ott.
Okay. Thank you. Doug, I think you're on first.
Yes. Hi, I'm Doug Klotz. I'm on the City Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and I represented that committee on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And you have a letter from them. The Pedestrian Advisory Committee supports the majority of the plan. We could not come to a consensus on the issue of housing at OMSI, so we will leave that aside. But there's a lot of things that we do support. We are concerned about the Central East Side continuing to serve its role as providing jobs that are close in and accessible by biking, walking, transit, while it's still acknowledging that there's a lot of pressure for people who want to live close in, too. So we feel the plan, you know, is working toward balancing this. We're still out on the OMSI station issue. We support the EX designation in the Clinton Triangle. We support the changes that would add signals at various locations to optimize freight movement, but would also benefit pedestrians such as Ankeny and Martin Luther King, Salmon at King, Grand, and 7th, and enhanced crossings at 11th and 12th at Salmon and Harrison. We support the Green Loop, especially the two bridges, one at the north end, a pedestrian bike bridge over I-84 around 7th, and at the south end, over from Martin Luther King across Division Street and the Union Pacific tracks down to the vicinity of the OMSI station, parallel to the streetcar bridge. The ground floor character regulations are a new thing, and we support those, especially since they have been modified to ensure that pedestrian-friendly building fronts are allowed along all the city walkway designated streets in the district. And the last thing, we urge the planting of the broadest street trees, the most spreading street trees to provide the most shade that will still fit within all the parameters of the industrial district and truck movements, and to work to decrease the heat island effect that is certainly pervasive at that district now. And so we generally support the plan, and we feel it was a good process. There was a lot of diverse opinions there, and the staff did a pretty good job of balancing that all out. It's a difficult issue.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for your involvement in it as well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Hashkin, and we operate a small manufacturing business in the Central East Side. We love the location, the proximity to our suppliers, and the ease of freight access. We ship and receive freight daily from all of the major freight carriers, YRC, SCs, USF Redaway, SIA. And all of our staff also bike to work, walk to work, or take transit. By biking and taking transit to work, our staff frees up space for freight deliveries and for freight shipments. One of the biggest drawbacks of this location, though, in the Central East Side, is the lack of safe, all-ages active transportation routes through the district for our staff. I feel that active transportation and freight are not in conflict in our neighborhood. The freight drivers we work with on a daily basis are courteous and professional operators. The conflict and delay in freight shipments that we see is from typically single occupancy vehicle congestion, parking, and lack of traffic management. Please support the Green Loop and other active transportation improvements in the Central East Side so our staff and others can walk, bike, and transit to our neighborhood and free up space for freight delivery and pickup. As I said, the Central East Side is great for our business because of the central location. We appreciate the diversity of nearby businesses that allow us to make work trips on foot or by bike. And we'd like to see more active transportation infrastructure to make doing business safer and traveling the neighbor safer. We specifically ask you to look also at the last minute amendments like Amendment Number 4 and to continue to support Vision Zero and prioritize active transportation investments in the neighborhood while also balancing the needs of freight. I also ask you to look at Amendment Number 7 and not to classify Northeast Davis as a major truck street. That street is where our business is located, and it's classified as a city bikeway in the 2030 master plan. It's a crucial east-west route. It's one of the only safe routes to get from the Burnside Bridgehead area through the district east-west, and it's one of the only signalized crossings of MLK and Grand. One other note on the industrial affordability I'd like to mention as well and mention about mixed-use industrial space. I used to run our business in Vancouver, BC, and there they have a similar area that became the Olympic Village. It was the False Creek industrial area. And what they did there was they created industrial condos and live workspaces where you actually have retail on the ground floor, but then a variety of industrial condos up above. These were much more affordable as a business owner or as a business operator than any other business location. The other nice thing about the Vancouver, BC example is that they made an emphasis on different size footprints. A lot of times we hear about creating industrial space that's 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 square feet. But if you really want that startup, that entrepreneurial maker space, I'd encourage you to look at the smaller footprints and formalize that in code, the 500 to 5,000 square foot spaces.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor. Tom Rocca from Seven Hills Properties. We've been developing up here for approximately the last 10 or 12 years, have a few projects going on the Inner East Side, as well as Northern California and San Francisco. I've heard this argument previously down in San Francisco. Our company is based actually south of Market, and we've seen significant changes there over the last 28 years that we've been located there. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to thank staff for doing a wonderful job on the presentation of this. It's been really interesting and really good to see the work that's gone in, excuse me, and the product that's come out. I think they're to be commended for their work. We basically agree with everything, but we really want to support the extended EOS over all of the IG. I think it's good for the district. I think any time you limit supply, and we saw that in the early 90s in San Francisco, that it drove. There's some other intrinsic factors south of Market that aren't similar to the east side, but it did drive up prices. The other thing is I think that I've never seen it work where industry didn't pick how the mixes went in a mixed-use district, which is what we're trying to do here. And I think by codifying areas as solely IG and not EOS over the whole thing, people outside of the industries are going to be picking the mixes, and that usually doesn't work too well. Personal experience in that, but I think it's something that's worth considering, and we would support the EOS extension over the IG fully. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all very much. Okay, let's take the next three, please.
The next three are Dana Kroschek, Haytham Toulon, and Rindert Schouten. And then the last person on the previous sign-in would be Dave Ott. We'll call in a moment.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. No. Mayor, councilors. Dana Kraftcheck. I'm here actually on behalf of two different people. First, EcoTrust LLC. They've submitted testimony, and Sam Beebe is here if you have any questions. As you know, they have an innovative food manufacturing project called The Red on Salmon, and they are in favor of the expansion of the EOS. Secondly, I'm here on behalf of Haytham Toulon, who you will hear from next, and he's going to describe his vision for his really outstanding property that's located at 306 Southeast Ivan. That's in the southern portion of the OMSI station area. And you'll hear from him his vision for an iconic project that's employment-driven, engages the water, multimodal. What I'm here to talk about, the testimony that was previously submitted and you have, has a few images because really it is worth 1,000 words. It's an amazing piece of property. It's 3 acres, currently undeveloped, so you're not going to have any displacement issues. 300 lineal feet of waterfront, a terrific beach opportunity. It's where the Greenway Trail goes. This is really, like I said, an iconic development opportunity, one that shouldn't be missed. We were initially concerned that the recommended plan was unduly narrow in terms of the opportunities on this site, that it was a one-size-fit-all approach that didn't recognize the opportunities in a 3-acre undeveloped site. We've worked closely with BPS staff, council staff, mayor staff, and have come to understand, and I think as the mayor said, you know, there is more work to be done. And in that next phase of more work to be done, we understand that BPS staff is going to maintain some flexibility in terms of the intensity and types of uses that are appropriate on unique sites like this. And that's something that we support, and we request your affirmative direction to allow for that nimbleness with BPS staff. Patrick Quinton said, you know, we need incentive for development to occur, particularly on a complicated, contaminated large site like this. So I think through this more refined code drafting process that will have plenty of public review, that's the time to really evaluate what's appropriate for this site. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name's Haitham Toulon. I'm managing partner of OSB Toulon Management. I wrote a short blurb, and I'll try to stay on it. So. I believe we have the opportunity to create a building that supports Portland's people, Portland's economy, Portland's environment. Today I'm here to ask for continued planning. The problem is there's an undeveloped parcel on the east bank of the Willamette. 3 acres, 300 lineal feet, 45,000 square feet of a DSL water lease are the numbers to describe this site. Amazing city, river, and West Hill views are what you see when you're on the bank itself. Without continued planning, those numbers and views will be underused. The site poses some challenges. Some environmental cleanup is needed. Also, extensive soil work to build a solid base. With continued planning, those challenges can easily be overcome. We have options to build a public beach, a public boat launch, and affordable makerspace. So when we say yes to continued planning, it opens up the opportunity for us to have those options, while also continuing the Greenway path, connecting to the spring water corridor, and engaging the river. Mayor Hales, city commissioners, as I know, there are concerns that historically the site has not had a residential use or the concern of bringing in big box retailers versus local makers, and the concern that a building will create more vehicle traffic. That's why we should say yes to continued planning so we can work together to combat these concerns to progress the city of Portland for generations to come. Let's work together to make sure to use this space to avoid big box retail, to support local makers. Let's explore ways to limit vehicle traffic, promote public transportation. Saying yes to continued planning is an answer to leaving a legacy, supporting local businesses and growing Portland. I want to be the developer that works with you on this when you say yes to continued planning. I will dedicate my time to find the best use for this site. I'll start planning with feedback from early assistance meetings, setting up the master plan review process to come to a collective agreement. This is more than a building to me. It is an opportunity for me to give back to the city that I have always called home. In the years to come, the planning we are doing today will open up the property to amazing views of the city, to Portlanders enjoying public beaches and green spaces. It'll allow local business owners to create their products in the central city and attract businesses from outside of Portland to generate new revenue in Multnomah County. Saying yes to continued planning is more important than ever. Portland is one of the fastest growing cities in America. Families and businesses are moving here at a rapid rate. The timing and location of this property fits in perfectly with the Tillicum Crossing connection, the river being its cleanest, and the growing demand for commercial, residential, retail, and makerspace in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Rindert Schutten. I own a small business called Schutten Works. We work. We design and manufacture actually accessories for iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. Right now, I operate out of the basement of my home. So I'm one of those Portland-made makers here in Portland that helped actually put Portland on the map as a leading community for artisanal manufacturing. New businesses that produce, in general, high quality, often produced in small batches, products, a lot of them can be seen at a Made Here PDX store just opposite Powell's. If you have not been there, go there and buy something. Good stuff there. As many of my fellow makers in Portland, my business is growing, and I expect to have to move into a new space early next year, which is great. I would love to move to a location in the Central East, in just East Side. There are many reasons for this. First of all, many of my suppliers are located there, many of my maker friends and design services are there, and obviously there is very good food and very good beer. Moreover, it is close to where I live right now and where prospective employees live, so we can actually bike to work. And as we all know, traffic is bad enough in Portland, and we do not need to add more traffic to the commute that we, some of them, I don't, but some of them experience every day. So I would urge you, Portland City Council and Major Hills, by the way, I voted for all of you, so I'm not letting you know.
Thank you.
To ensure that affordable space for Portland makers not only remains available, but also to actively promote and support new development. And this was sounds very interesting, what you're just telling me here. I think we have the opportunity to show how urban manufacturing can really work, create jobs, and create opportunities for anyone that wants to build a business by manufacturing actually physical products, which, in fact, truly is the backbone of our industrial endeavors. So maybe in a few years, if we do it right, the Central East Side Industrial District will be the example for the rest of America on how to create a vibrant, multi-use district where design, fabrication, manufacturing and distribution functions, integrated and seamlessly working together. So I only saw today amendments 10 and 11, and I think those are great amendments and great additions to the Expo plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay, others on the list?
I have Dave Ott and Rehana Ansari. And unless Bill Stites or Jackie Winkler are here, that's all I show on the previous sign up.
Okay. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, City Council and Mayor Hales. My name is Dave Audi, representing Holst Architecture at 110 Southeast 8th in the Central East Side. You have our written testimony from Holst, but I thought rather today I would give you a specific example of small business retention from a different perspective, from that of the industrial office user rather than so-called makers. Holst has grown up in the CEID for over 20 years. At Southeast 8th, at our location in 1992, there were 3 employees in the building. In 2010, we had 11 employees. And today in 2015, we're about to hire our 40th employee. Needless to say, we are outgrowing our space and we need to move. We did a staff survey of all of our employees, and the overwhelming desire was for us to stay in the Central East Side Industrial District. We have roots in our district and we feel ownership of its success. And we've been looking around. We will probably need to leave the Central East Side without the EOS expansion. We feel that we too are makers. We help make our city, and we feel great pride in that. And so we urge you to expand the EOS and let us stay in the district that we love. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners, Rehana Ansari, here to support the Southeast Quadrant Plan on behalf of the Portland Business Alliance. First, we'd like to applaud staff for preserving the industrial sanctuary and expanding the employment sub-area to keep pace with emerging trends and broaden middle-income job opportunities to include light industrial and makerspace. We believe that special attention should be made to maintaining the role of the Central East Side as a designated freight district while balancing and improving access for other modes. We recognize that the Green Loop is conceptual at this point and recommend thorough analysis and identifying potential bike-ped alignments that will not compromise freight operations. We'd like to thank city staff for working with the Portland Freight Committee and the Central East Side Industrial Council to modify plan language and maintain southbound freeway access from the Morrison Bridge for freight trips originating from the Central East Side. We look forward to enhanced synergy between downtown and the Central East Side. Each offers distinct employment opportunities, but together serve as an economic hub for the Portland metro region. So thank you.
Thank you.
So, I had a question for Mr. Audi. So you're currently in space that's zoned IG1?
IG1, yes.
So by extending the overlay, it will allow you to stay there and expand?
That's correct.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Thank you both. Okay, then let's move to the science sheet for today.
Okay, for the amendments only testimony, I have Micah Mishkel, Marcelino Alvarez, and Debbie Kitchen.
Come on up, please.
My comments weren't specific to the amendments. They were.
We can take testimony on the whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. Mayor and commissioners, my name is Micah Mishkel. Thank you for having me here today. I work for the Audubon Society of Portland, and we've submitted electronic comments, and I am testifying in addition to that. Audubon is deeply concerned about the proposals being considered in the Southeast Quadrant Plan that would upzone existing industrial lands to other uses or expand allowances of non-industrial uses on existing industrial lands. Specifically, this includes the upzoning of lands around OMSI and the application of employment opportunity subarea overlay and central employment zone on existing industrial lands. So we want to make it clear that that we can see merit in many of these proposals when viewed in isolation, though when considered within the context of other city quadrant processes and the alleged industrial land deficit that is writ large within those processes, in addition to the comp plan, these policies within the quadrant, Southeast Quadrant, seem to conflict with that. As proposed, the Southeast Quadrant Plan could lead to a significant reduction in industrial acres in the coming years and could set the stage for full-scale conversion of the district over a more extended time period. And this is due to the potential tipping point effects as we get more and more commercial and residential and retail in these mixed-use areas, could raise rents, which then could raise higher, raise higher property values and then lead to major shifts. The plan, as we see it, could perpetuate a recent trend of industrial land conversions without meaningful consideration of industrial land supply. This happened at South Waterfront, Cascade Station, in addition to the Pearl District and Terminal 1. Additionally, added flexibility of use and upzoning appears fundamentally at odds with certain policies of the draft comprehensive plan, and those include no net loss of industrial lands, strict restriction of non-industrial uses of industrial lands, the shifting of administrative functions and non-industrial uses of industrial lands, in addition to limiting potentially conflicting uses surrounding industrial lands. We fear that in 5 years, when the city, at the direction of the comprehensive plan, reassesses whether industrial land needs are being met and then further proposes strategies to address any of these deficits, it will regret decisions made in the Southeast Quadrant Plan. The proposals in the Central City Plan would appear to almost guarantee the fact that the city will find itself in an even deeper deficit situation, even if all of the measures outlined in the comprehensive plan, including brownfield remediation, intensification, et cetera, are achieved. If that is the case, history shows that the burden to address the deficit will fall on natural resource lands and open spaces, as well as pressure to limit on or roll back environmental regulations on industrial lands. The alleged existing industrial land deficit has in recent years already resulted in efforts to restrict new environmental regulations on industrial lands, as well as proposals to convert open spaces such as golf courses and natural areas like West Hayden Island to industrial use. This presents the reality that a logical decision today, the Southeast Quadrant Plan, will lead to logical decisions in the future as the city attempts to remediate its deficits.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just address that, because my understanding, based on the memo that was introduced today on the industrial demand and capacity, that this change in zoning actually triples the amounts of industrial land available in the Central East site, so it actually helps with the issues that Audubon is concerned about?
Yes, so we understand that, but we're also concerned about the tipping point, which I pointed out earlier, could increase rent and incentivize other uses of lands within the same area, which could further lead to conversion.
But those other uses aren't allowed.
What was that?
So there's very limited housing, and it has to have a conditional use, and OMSI has had that conditional use process available to them for a long time. So I think we're all agreed that we don't want it to be the Pearl or South Waterfront, that it's an industrial sanctuary. So I'm just not quite understanding Audubon's. I understood the concern, but then when I heard it's been addressed by this, and maybe Debbie and others could comment on this, but do you have further comments?
I don't. I wasn't lead on this project.
Right.
Bob Salinger might be the better one to answer his concerns on that, but he couldn't make it today.
Okay, great. If you could make sure that you give him this memo that was handed out. I don't know if you have a copy of it.
Well, yeah, I grabbed a copy already.
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Thank you. Commissioners, thank you very much as well. I'd also like to thank...
Marcelino, put your name in the record.
Sorry. Marcelino Alvarez, Chief Executive Officer of Uncork Studios, a company in the Central East Side. First off, I wanted to thank members of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee for the work and the effort that was put into this document. I think it did a magnificent job in balancing both the history of the district as well as looking forward toward the opportunities that lie in front of us. I think when you look at the district and you look at the history of industry and how it's grown over time, and you look at the opportunities that have been fostered by the development of businesses such as ours, we're at a pretty unique point. And I think for us, this is a really great opportunity to maintain that history, but also build a foundation for the next generation of companies to grow in the district. Our own company history is pretty inextricably linked with the Central East Side. From our humble beginnings in about 1,500 square feet of space to over four times that now, just 4 years later. We have gone from a company that designs and builds products for larger companies from outside of the state of Oregon to one that has been able to incorporate startups and residents, small companies, individuals, and freelancers, and kind of see their growth path both from a collaboration standpoint as well as from a cooperation standpoint. As we look ahead, kind of the idea of makers in our community, I think Portland is uniquely poised to connect old industry and new industry in ways that we don't see anywhere else in the world. Particularly when you look at Portland's rich history from a technology standpoint in chip maker and manufacturing, and you look at kind of the emergence of makers who are looking to prototype and build things, with their hands and bring them to market and scale them. There's an amazing opportunity to connect, things that are prototyped to things that have polish and get delivered to thousands of people. There's an opportunity to balance the idea of handcrafted products with those that are manufactured. And if we look at kind of the corridor that runs from Sandy down to OMSI, across the river, across Tillicum Crossing into OHSU and to some of the other districts, all the way over to Hillsborough to our friends over there who make a lot of chips, there's an amazing opportunity for small companies to take their concepts from just renting a couple desks to potentially owning a building just a few years down the line. So for us as a company, we're in favor of policies that expand the EOS with an eye towards balancing the needs of makers, of designers, and of entrepreneurs while maintaining a balance, a connection, and a collaboration between the industrial elements that made this district possible. Along with the ecosystem between old styles of manufacturing and new styles that will set us forward 10, 20, 30 years down the line. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak about the amendments today. I'm Debbie Kitchen and president of the Central East Side Industrial Council, and I'm here to support amendments 10 and 11. As you know from our previous comments, one of our key issues is the affordability of industrial space for the manufacturers and industry that are in the Central East Side. So I feel these measures will help with that, at least give us better knowledge and better perhaps develop some new tools that we can use. So I'm testifying in support of these and would like to have those included, or these amendments included. I am concerned a little bit about the discussion earlier about continued planning for that BPS apparently has offered, because I don't know if that's open just to one developer or if it's open to anyone in the district, but I think I would like to see some direction from City Council about that issue, because I think we need to know what the parameters are as we go forward into the more detailed analysis in the coming year. But thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Okay.
Two more people, Emma Pellett and Jim Howell.
Afternoon, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come and talk to you today. My name is Emma Pellett, and I'm a part of City Liquidators and Pellett Properties. My family has been stakeholders in the Central East Side Industrial District since 1977. We have over 14 parcels in the neighborhood, and we call it our home. I've spent a lot more time in that district than I have in any other place in the city of Portland, and it means a lot to me. Today, I'm here speaking in favor of UD6, which is about creating publicly accessible but privately owned parks. The Central East Side Industrial District is one of the most park-deficient districts in the city. There's not a lot of places for people who work in that district to go outside and enjoy anything other than the East Bank Esplanade and then down at the end, the Springwater Corridor. So on a day like today where the heat's really hot, there's no relief from that. We hardly have any tree coverage, and we have very few parks to go enjoy. So although the change does change some of the language, I don't believe that it changes the spirit of UD6, and so I'm still in favor of that. But I would like to ask for continued support from Mr. Nick Fish, who's not here, and BES, that they help us kind of navigate the waters of putting a publicly accessible park on a piece of our property that has a BES easement on it.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, name is Jim Howell. Thanks for letting me testify on something that's not an amendment. I'd like to talk about something that hasn't been discussed at all in this whole process. It's a missing link. This is a 20-year plan, and there's going to be a definite need for a light rail connection between the Rose Quarter and the new Tillicum Bridge on the east side. There is not the capacity on the steel bridge for light rail of the future. In fact, it's pretty well clogged up today. And that should be a consideration in this planning. Now, I know this is a City of Portland plan, not a metro or a TriMet plan. I'm afraid those agencies are somewhat challenged when it comes to long-range visioning of what needs to be done. But this is going to be needed. There's a huge problem with I-5 now. It's clogged up every night. It's going to be clogged up for all day long in 20 years from now if we don't have an alternative to that. And this would definitely help that by extending the light rail system that could eventually go from Vancouver to Tualatin through this corridor. And it would also allow the Tillman Crossing to be used in case of emergency. Now, if the steel bridge breaks down, you're kind of stuck with buses. So that's what I think should have been in here. I wish that you could convince PBOT to be serious about light rail, even though it's not their domain. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I think they're serious about light rail. But good point, Jim. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
Thank you.
So do you have any others that are signed up or who are here and want to speak and didn't sign up? Okay. Yeah. Oh, come on up, please. Come on, Ken.
Yeah, I had...
just put your name in the record, Ken.
Yeah, Ken Clock, Clock Associates from Southeast. Mayor, councilman, woman. Yeah, there was a letter that was put in by a group of businesses, which I'm sure you have, and I thought I'd provide perhaps a little more explanation behind the letter, you know, what the reasoning was, and give you a little background on the group in general. Southeast Industrial Businesses are a pretty quiet bunch. They largely keep their nose to the grindstone, and they pay their bills, and they pay their employees. They're good citizens. They keep their property and their buildings up. They keep the street trash picked up. They report crime. And they're a very independent bunch, and they don't ask the city for much. Basically, the freedom to do their business in an efficient manner. All they're asking here for is existing business to be afforded the protection of a doctor's oath. First, do no harm. With the current disconnect between the plan verbiage and the plan detail, the overriding concern of us, the group, is that without a renewed commitment by City Council to protect existing industrial business and their requirements from harm, there would seem to be little reason to expect that in the next planning phase, enough substantive changes to the plan would be allowed in order to provide that protection. So that's the main concern. It seems that, and this is just my take, this is not the group, it seems that government often focuses on what it might get rather than what it already has. If this industrial community loses its critical mass or its critical efficiency and disperses elsewhere, the city could never put together an industrial community like it again. We have grown up together, we interact, we complement each other. In fact, this industrial community complements this city itself. I know several businesses that manufacture or supply various components or provide services for departments of this city. For the city of Portland, you can't get more sustainable or efficient than that. We're a stone's throw away. Thank you.
So if you don't mind, let me ask you to elaborate a little bit more, because you and I have had a conversation or two, and we appreciate the letter. And, you know, one of the things that's striking about this letter is just the length of time that a lot of these businesses have been operating. So you went to the trouble of, you know, compiling that. So thank you.
Yes.
What's the harm, or what are the harms that you're most concerned about?
I think, you know, as I say here, the freedom to have an efficient movement throughout the system, and by that
freight,
I mean
freight movement in particular,
freight movement and intercompany movement, you know, between businesses that we do business with, or that other, you know, anybody in that whole group, they do interactive business with a lot of other businesses in there, you know, whether it's for pipe or for parts or for bearings or, right? So there's a lot of interaction within the district too. So it's not good enough just to think about freight that's coming in off of the freeway and or going back to the freeway. There's a lot of interaction in there, and I guess the, you know, the things that we see that are you know, a bit of an issue there are, as I've spelled out, you know, new bike lanes. There are existing bike lanes that bisect the district, and we're not talking about those. We're talking about new lanes that would further bisect it and bog traffic. And quite frankly, I think it would make the district in general a less safe place, because there would be more places where, you know, people would be looking out for bikes. I mean, you're talking about areas here. This is not downtown Portland. You're talking about areas here where I don't know what size trucks Franz runs. They're really big. But ones that would come into our area, you know, you could easily see a truck that's 53-foot semi-bed, so you're talking about a 75-foot truck, you know, and that's backing into businesses and pulling out of businesses that are in that district. So, I mean, it's definitely, it's a more dangerous place than an area that's primarily small delivery vehicles and cars. So I see that as an issue. I see something that's undefined, and the group does too, of course, as the green loop. It's an undefined area, and that I guess that lends a bit of instability in the sense that if you don't know what that contains, it's pretty hard to feel like you can invest more in your business. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So appreciate the point about large over the road trucks, you know, that you just mentioned, but I assume most of those intra-company or intercompany local deliveries are in smaller trucks. I assume that's the case.
Relatively, though, you have to appreciate that you know, a lot of things will come in on 40-foot flatbed, so that would shorten that particular rig by 13 feet or something. You know, so you're still talking about a 60-some-odd foot vehicle overall that would be delivering steel, that sort of thing. That's long pieces of steel. So it's going to be an over-the-road vehicle that would be delivering to you know, a local business in that area.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
And or picking up for, you know, for a plating operation or something like that, that there is going to be probably a 40-foot over-the-road vehicle that's going to be picking up for that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll try and put as much on there as they can before they go back to the plant.
Yeah, I think one of the things that your testimony raises, and also just this list does, is that obviously there's a supply chain thing going on here. I mean, you supply Fran's Bakery yourself, and other businesses there are supplying you. And frankly, I think we learned a little bit about how the Central East Side works from just the list of who you had on this letter. So I appreciate that. I guess we want to make sure we'll get staff to respond a little bit to this too. That does the transportation component of this plan work for those kinds of, for that kind of truck circulation, is really the, you know, another way to state your question. And I want the answer to be yes. So
I can't answer that because I don't know that for sure.
Yeah. You
know,
no, I mean, I want them to look me in the face and say that, because they're, I mean, you and I might have our opinion, but they're the professionals, and I want to hear them say that they believe that will be the case, because I think that's the goal here.
Yes, and I would dearly love for somebody that had that size vehicle, like, say, Franz, for example, or whatever, somebody actually drive that.
Yeah,
is it practical?
Well, Franz is
it
actually practical? Running triples.
Well, I know they run triples. Yeah,
that's sort of the ultimate test of whether we can get a truck into this district or not, because they're actually, I mean, granted, it's a limited route. They come in off the freeway, they take a left onto 12th, and they take. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there, you know, that we know that it's possible in an industrial district, you know, with a small street grid and a lot of other things going on, to still get big trucks in. But the devil is in the details. So.
It is.
Yeah. So, sure. Go ahead, Dan.
So is it your preference that the existing industrially zoned property remain as it is and not have the employment opportunity sub area overlay? Is that?
I guess there's a couple of components to that. One would be the so-called disclaimer. Is that right?
Yeah, the disclaimer. Yeah. Right.
I think that needs to be a lot stronger than what it is right now. As I understand it would be something that would be read to the people that would be occupying that. But I think it would need to be a lot stronger than that. It would have to be something that City Council would probably take a position on. You know, something that's actually on the books, meaning if you've moved into this area, you've signed something, you know that that's fact, and you know that if you have a complaint about smell, if you have a complaint about noise, whatever the case might be, that it's just not going to be heard.
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding.
It's just not going to be heard, and it will never get to us. So you won't have somebody here show up, you know, 5 years from now that has an office there and it's being disrupted by noise or whatever the case is, and then you have 60 people show up here at this meeting and say, hey, we can't put up with this. It would be more like you're not on the agenda because you chose to be here in this area, and
Okay. So you're concerned
stronger than, yeah, than something that somebody has just read and said, yes, I understand that. It's that the city is not going to hear that complaint.
Okay. Good. That's good. Other questions? Right.
That's my understanding of the intent of the.
I agree. I think that's the intent. I'm not sure it goes as far as the city won't hear this complaint. You know, you've signed up for.
As elected that. Officials, we always have to listen. People get their 3 minutes to say whatever they want, but there wouldn't then be any follow-up action. And I think probably staff, before this is adopted, this is a preliminary approval. There's going to be some refinement. So I agree with you. I think we all share your concern that in the future, it would be nice for me to have a tool in some other situations where it's very clear that this was an adopted position of the council and you knew it when you came in here.
Right. And long after perhaps you've gone on to something else.
I'm going whoever, to be here for another 30 years.
Whoever sits in your place would thank you for the fact that.
Yeah. It's important to have it clear so that it doesn't matter who's sitting in this place.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, it's a very sound point. I mean, regardless of how long Commissioner Fritz chooses to endure in this role, one of the things that actually the city's been pretty good at in these kinds of planning efforts is, you know, even though people in these chairs have changed, we've been pretty consistent about some of these policies, and one of them is the industrial sanctuary itself. You know, there's the line, you know, down Vaughan Street in the Northwest Industrial Sanctuary has held despite entreaties, lobbying, and other political machinations over the years. And that's not just one or two or three of our opinion. That's been the opinions of, you know, probably more than a dozen members of the City Council over a long, very, very long time period. And same thing with the Central East Side Industrial Sanctuary. So this stuff, it does matter that it be durable. And we take your point about that. So we'll look carefully at that language.
And I was actually a community advocate when the first EOS spot zonings were done, or the trial. And we had exactly the same conversation, concerned about whether it would bleed over and change the nature of the district. And from my part, it seems to me that experiment has been successful, that it's allowed some different kinds of industrial activities to come into the district, but we haven't yet lost it. But I absolutely share your concern that we not get to that tipping point.
You know, another point that you raised that I guess I just want to get us all to think a little bit more about, and that is I know there's some nervousness by some of the traditional manufacturers, you may be included, about the bike access piece of the planning effort here. But we've also heard, in fact, we heard today from manufacturers in the district who have a very large preponderance of their workforce arriving by bicycle. And they're actually freeing up road capacity and parking spaces for industrial operations by the fact that that's how the employees, for example, at Spooltown get to work. So, you know, we have an interest, I think, as an industrial district in making it a bike-friendly environment, but it also has to be a freight-friendly environment. And that's the challenge that the whole team of the Citizen Committee and the staff have been trying to accomplish in this effort.
But actually, Mr. Mayor,
we think that's possible.
Yeah, and I think that a major, just looking at the plan itself, and a major focus of the transportation discussions was that, just a quote from the plan, a lack of clearly defined routes identified by bike supportive infrastructure and signage results in many cyclists dispersing on multiple routes throughout the district. This increases conflicts with freight activities and raises significant safety concerns for cyclists. So the improved signalization and other measures being taken on Salmon, Harrison, Clay, and Ankeny are designed to, you know, to reduce that kind of conflict.
Right. And I appreciate that that's probably particularly true for trucks off of the freeway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your point there's a lot more local circulation going on as well.
There's a lot of inner southeast, if you will, interaction between companies that won't necessarily fall into that pattern. So,
good. Well, we appreciate you continuing to raise these issues, and hopefully over the course of the next few months, we get to the level of clarity you're looking for. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, anyone else? Come on up, please.
Sam Beebe with EcoTrust.
the last time I was here, I was testifying. Last time I sat here, I was testifying legalizing skateboarding. It's kind of funny.
I remember that hearing.
That was a while ago.
Yeah. Thank you for your support on that.
You and our chief executive, chief administrative officer's son.
Just wanted to say thank you to Dana for sharing her time expressing our support of the EOS overlay. Thank you for the mayor's office and the commissioner's times coming out to the Red on Salmon and their support, and Troy Doss and the Bureau's support. We've also had the support of the Central East Side Industrial Council and the PDC. So we support the EOS and adoption of the plan.
I assume the EOS is necessary for your plan to really work on your site?
Yeah, it's very helpful. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Beeline is a terrific example of freight and bicycle.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about that, that at least some of those local deliveries ought to be feasible that way.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, can we have the staff come back up and see if there are any further questions? There may not be, but we can at least check in with them. I guess, I have a couple of requests, and that is just the points that Mr. Clark made about the disclaimer and about local truck circulation. We don't necessarily need all the answers now, but I just want to get your sense about how those are going to get those issues are going to be developed further in the next phase of the planning process.
Sure. So the disclosure statement will be coming back in the next phase of development for the entire Central City 2035 plan. So when we're done with this quadrant plan, we will be all moving into that phase of development where we will be bringing you a document. I believe it's targeted for next July. That'll have all of the policy for the entire Central City and each sub-district, as well as all of the zoning improvements. So you'll have a chance to look at things like the disclosure statement, like the final zoning language for the EOS. All of that will be embodied in that. And I think getting at some of the points that was raised in terms of, I think it kind of gets to what's the legislative intent behind the disclosure statement. We can make a very strong statement in that, as well as the statement itself that people will be seeing out in the street. But I think the legislative intent will be very clear in there, because it'll allow staff going forward, as well as all future councils, to be able to look back and say, this is what we were trying to achieve with this. With regard...
So just to take an example, a multi-tenant office building, each lessee would sign this statement.
Yeah, so what would happen, the developer, so let's say you have a vacant parcel, it gets developed as this multi-story project. The developer would have to record a disclosure statement. It would be acknowledging that I and all my future tenants, my successors in interest, will be informed that this is an industrial district. There's going to be truck traffic. There's noise and fumes. It's all the charm of being here. And as long as these businesses are operating within legally established boundaries, the city's not going to take action on that. I mean, we can't stop people from complaining, and we are not going to stop fielding complaints. But we will be looking at it with if you don't like the fact that they're loading trucks in the street, the fact of the matter is they're allowed to do that. And we're not going to be taking action on that. And it is worth noting that we do not have a severe problem with that currently. We have had extensive conversations with the Bureau of Development Services, and I was very relieved to find out that in the last 10 years, they've fielded no complaints. So, now with regard to the truck bike movement,
yes,
I might want to have Grant come up to answer that question from PBOT, so I don't stumble on it. So,
drag up a chair.
Yes, Grant Moorhead, Bureau of Transportation. I think Commissioner Novick stated it very eloquently as he read from the plan. That our intent here really is to provide additional predictability for all modes as they move through the district, particularly the truck bike, potential truck bike conflict. As you look at the improvements that we've proposed, they really focus on, frankly, some low-hanging fruit in the infrastructure realm. When you get to the district, the routes that are pretty predictable and established east of the Central East Side tend to break down. So as you're riding a bike, if your destination is either in the district or downtown, if you're riding through the district, often there aren't really good ways to get to bridges or to major destinations. So some of the signalization and traffic control improvements that we're proposing will help to enhance that. I also want to state that we don't have all the answers at this point to everything. There is one of our action items, T13, is to conduct a loading needs analysis and to recommend policy changes on truck loading and access on a local scale. And that project is funded. It's getting underway. We had our kickoff meeting actually just this Monday. So we will be rolling that into the PBOT's larger citywide parking strategy. Implementation, adoption of that is on a similar time frame to Central City 2035. As you can imagine, there's a lot of overlap there. So we'll be looking at those issues pretty closely over the next year or so.
And I would want to just point out one reminder that we did get, we had freight interests as well as bike interests represented and pedestrian interests represented on our stakeholder advisory committee. And we had a bit of a hat trick of sorts. We had both the bicycle advisory committee, freight advisory committee, and pedestrian advisory committees all offer endorsement of this plan.
Good.
So there was a testimony from a gentleman about concern over traffic or truck traffic on Northeast Davis.
Yeah, it was changing the designation to a major truck street. I'll let Grant follow up on this, but what I would argue is, yes, it is one of the last streets that allows for that conductivity for cyclists as well as for vehicles. Mm-hmm. But it's also a significant freight route for people like Franz Bakery and others who are utilizing that. It's not a heavily used route. I think there's enough lane capacity there to accommodate both. And just because it would be a major truck street does not mean it would not also serve as a bikeway. In fact, there are a number of bikeways in the district that also, and throughout the city, that also have a freight designation on them.
Thanks. That's fine. And then hopefully Amendment 12 captures the issue that Ms. Paulette brought up about we're trying to make sure that we've got the bureaus working together to, quote, explore opportunities to create publicly accessible open space and recreational opportunities on public and private land throughout the Central East Side. So it includes, but it's not limited to the parcel that she's talking about, right?
Exactly.
Our hope and expectation that we'll try to make some of these ideas work because, as she pointed out, there's not really any open space, public or private, other than the Esplanade. In the district. So.
There's not. And one thing I would just point out on that, I want to applaud Emma and Walt Platt because, we would often come up with a notion of, boy, could you make publicly accessible open space on private land? That's always kind of a hope, but you don't see too many people come forward and say, I want to do that. So I would thank them for that.
But there's some nonprofit groups like the Trust for Public Land that might be able to assist in actually making that happen. So, yeah. Okay. Other questions or clarifications needed before we act on the amended resolution?
Just want to clarify on the record that my understanding of your memo is correct, that we are increasing the amount of industrial land by making the EOS overlay.
Yes, and if we can bring Tyler back up for that.
Is fine. I don't need any more than that.
We are.
Thank you.
Okay. Good job. Let the record know there was a head nod there, yes.
He said yesterday.
Yeah, I know he did. So anything else before we act? Steve's got a question for staff there, so get that addressed. Okay, so then I believe it's time that we take a roll call on the resolution as amended.
Saltzman?
Well, this is great. There seems to be a lot of consensus. I realize there's still some concerns of some of the long-term manufacturers there, but I do think that that there's a determination on our part to make this work, to preserve those types of jobs and employers that have really made the Central East Side and given it its character, but also to recognize the changes that are underway and that there are compatible uses, and I think there are maybe appropriately constrained under this Southeast Quadrant Plan that we're about to adopt. And I think we all very much, care about maintaining that job base, but we also recognize there's a lot of other compatible employer uses. And I think with the limitations on retail uses, it seems, as I think Troy just referred to, seems to be, maybe more than a hat trick, but when you have the freight and the bicyclists and the pedestrians all on the same page, that's good. And I think we have a substantial number, Central East Side Industrial Council, a substantial number of people seem very pleased with this effort. So I really want to commend Bureau of Planning staff and PDC and Bureau of Transportation, everybody else, and the tremendous public involvement. I think it's really been an outstanding product, and I'm very pleased to see all the pretty much consensus around this plan as being a good visionary product. So thanks to all, and please to vote aye.
Novick.
First of all, just as an aside, Commissioner Fritz, I was delighted to hear you're going to be here for 30 years. And I was just thinking I'd really like to see North by Northwest and Cathedral Park in 2045 in June. So could you set that aside? So I second what Commissioner Saltzman said. It's been remarkable over the past couple of months to see what looked like was going to be a pretty contentious debate turn into, as Commissioner Saltzman said, a fair level of consensus. I mean, not total consensus among everybody, but a remarkable level of consensus. And I'm really grateful to Troy and Tyler and all of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff and Debbie Kitchen and everybody in the CIC and the folks at OMSI who were able to come to an accommodation with other people in the affected parties. And I'd like to thank especially Grant Moorhead and Art Pierce and the PBOT folks who worked on this. I think that this is a remarkable resolution, and of course the work continues, but it seems to be one of these instances where our vaunted and often criticized Portland process actually worked, and it's really worth celebrating. Aye.
Fritz.
Thanks to Claire Adamczyk and Tom Bazot and my staff and all of the staff who've worked on this, especially Bureau of Planning staff who've briefed me on multiple occasions. Also the Hospital Abernethy Neighborhood Association and the Central Eastside Industrial Council, both of whom have been part of my education over decades here in Portland. First with the neighborhood associations, and then when I was on the Planning Commission, the Central Eastside Industrial Council made it your business to make sure that I knew what you do and why and how. And that has been enormously helpful over the years, and I want to be continuing to participate, whether in this chair or somewhere else, to make sure that we do continue to monitor the plans and that they don't sit on the shelf, that they get implemented appropriately. And we can always come back and look again if it turns out that it's not moving as we expected that it would. That's another great thing about planning, is that we don't just do it and hope for the best. We go back and look again and keep revising it. So I do agree with the concern that we are done with this phase and we need to not be doing multiple changes until we've got the whole comprehensive plan done, and then we might consider them. And still, it's a very good start. I also particularly appreciate keeping the master plan process for both OHS, OMSI, and the Clinton Triangle, because that, again, is going to have the appropriate public process as we move forward on those particularly difficult areas. Aye.
Hales.
Well, again, I want to thank everybody for the good work that's been done here, both the huge amount of hours that have been put in by community volunteers, whether formally from an organization like HAND or the Central Eastside Industrial Council or the other organizations that have paid attention to this effort, or just individuals, many of you here that have worked so hard on this. It's a great example of the grassroots planning that we believe in and that usually ends up with a good product, sometimes ends up with this level of agreement, but not very often. So that's really pretty remarkable. And Troy, you and Tyler and Sally, the others from the Bureau that have worked so hard on this, job well done, or this part of the job well done, because there's obviously more to do. But you deserve at least a day off or something after after all this. I was quizzing Tyler a little earlier about looking at best practices from other places, but I think as we all know, there's really no place like this. I mean, there are other sort of analogous situations in other cities, but here we are with this very compact core of a city that now is one of the most livable and walkable and best transit served urban environments in the country, with people choosing to move here in great numbers today, tomorrow, and next week, and as far as we can see, and real manufacturing still happening in walking distance from, say, City Hall, big law firms, and great restaurants. I don't know very many other places like that. I've spent most of my life thinking about or working on the growth and development of cities, not just this one. and I don't know of any place else like this. Yeah, there are pockets here and there in Denver or Miami or used to be in Brooklyn and Queens, but I think they're pretty much gone and replaced by 40-story condo towers now in my daughter's neighborhood, where she'll soon be priced out. So, you know, this is a really unusual situation. And so, therefore, there's a lot to keep in a pressurized environment, and we're going to really work together and try to accomplish that, because we want these long-term employers to stay there. And I hope you know that that's a serious commitment here. And, you know, seeing, or in Franz Bread's case, smelling, you know, the good effect of those jobs and of having those businesses be here and be able to remain viable here, that's pretty important for us as a city. So we're going to try to make that work, just as we have in those other industrial districts. Again, some of us have a little history on some of these issues. You know, I remember a couple of big fights, particularly one about a Costco store proposed in the Northwest Industrial Sanctuary, where we've tried to make these judgment calls about what's it going to take to keep the industrial base, the makers, as we now call them, making things. And we're going to keep trying to do that, and I hope we're going to keep succeeding, because this is pretty special. Secondly, we're trying to use an improvement of supply of space and opportunity as a way to make this work, much as we are actually also in housing, because we have huge competition for housing in this city. And there was an excellent article this week that my staff circulated about all the mistakes they made in San Francisco, about how they tried to stop change and they ended up pricing everybody or most everybody out of the housing market. And they didn't think much about the supply side, a phrase that has earned some discredit at the national level in politics. But here we are actually trying to make a supply side element of the solution work. And I've been persuaded, although with some repeated effort on their part, by these professionals sitting in front of us here, that that is the right and prudent thing to do here, to have a supply side element of this strategy, so that we create more space and therefore maybe a little less competition for what's there now. I hope that we can make that work, because I'm pretty sure that trying to freeze the Central East Side is not going to be a viable solution, just like the efforts in San Francisco to freeze the housing market didn't work out for anybody except a few people there. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this is the right set of strategies. The details about which street works which way still need to be worked out. Your point today about the disclosures and other the other communication that we have with current and future occupants and residents and property owners and investors and tenants in this district, very important. So again, I was teasing Troy a little bit about taking a day off and then having a lot more work to do, because there is a lot more work to do, just as there is on the rest of the plan. Again, I want to return to Patrick's statement. We do sometimes tend to get pretty mesmerized in this room and in this process, but we got to think about makerspace all over the city and in places where people aren't making things now. We got to think about 82nd Avenue, where we're making deals on used cars, but not much else right now. And maybe we can have some higher and better uses in terms of employment density other places that are still pretty close to the heart of things in Portland, and where, again, not everybody has to find a cool old building in the Central East Side in order to start their business. So Patrick's right about that, and I think we and PDC, as well as in the Planning Bureau and elsewhere, have work to do to try to widen those opportunities elsewhere in the city. So that's why this does fit into a bigger piece of work, and we have to think about the whole city while we complete this plan. This is a very important piece. I'm obviously very excited about it. I think it's great work. I want to commend Jackie Dingfelder on my staff and the folks from all the bureaus that have worked hard together with this to get us this far. So one more very important building block in place. Job well done. Thank you all. Aye. Thank you very much, and we're adjourned for the week.
No, we're not.
Yeah. Sorry, we got one thing I've got to return to, but it's not this. I was getting excited and getting ready to adjourn and remembering that we've got to go back to item 810, right?
All right. 810.
Item 810, ratify a successor collective bargaining agreement between the city and Oregon AFSCME Council 75, Local 189-3, relating to the terms and conditions of employment of represented employees at the Portland Housing Bureau for 2015-2019.
Okay, we'll see if our staff is in the room yet, or whether I surprise them. There she is. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Why do we have to do this now rather than just next week?
I don't know. Okay, Jan, why don't you, Cheyenne, explain where we are
here. Do we have to reconsider first?
I think we need the explanation first, and then we can take the motion, right?
Okay. This came to my attention after this council voted to ratify the contract this morning, that the language in the ordinance needed to be changed to reflect the fact that the cost that increases that would be associated with the contract will be coming from not only the general fund but other city funds as may be available. So we're moving to amend the ordinance to reflect that.
Make that motion.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Now,
we already passed it. Don't we have to move to reconsider?
Yes, you're right. Now, I'm sorry. We have to first move to reconsider and then take the motion. So, is there a motion to reconsider?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Let's take a roll call on the motion to reconsider.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Now, there's a motion and a second to move the amendment. Further discussion? Roll call on the amendment.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And is there anyone that wants to speak on the amended ordinance? If not, then we'll take a roll call vote on the amended ordinance.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Just so you know, folks, there may be something on next week's vote on the other union ordinance, because since it won't go into effect for 30 days, that is going to cause challenges for people getting paid. So the staff are trying to figure out what to do about that, and I'm sure you'll do that in my absence. Aye.
Hales.
Yes, they are, and we will. Thank you. Aye. Now we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.